This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. Like other NGOs, community hospices have been struggling in the past month since the MCO was first implemented. Community hospices play an important role in providing care and comfort to patients living with a serious illness. But hospice care, also known as palliative care, remains a taboo and a very difficult subject to bring up because many still associate it only with a patient's death. So to help us understand the role of community hospice, we're speaking to Dr. Lam Chee Lung and Catherine Ooi, the Chairman and Vice President of the respectively of the Malaysian Hospice Council. Welcome to the show. How are the both of you today?
Thank you. Morning. It's great to be here. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much. I would echo that as well. It's a great opportunity to share what we do with everyone else.
I mean, really, because we spoke to Dr. Ednin of Hospice Malaysia during the MCO, actually, and he shared with us some of the challenges that they went through during the lockdown period. Palliative care wasn't recognized as an essential service, so their people couldn't go to homes and, you know, look after patients and things like that. And there were a lot of challenges during that time until they got palliative care recognized as an essential service, and after which people could move around and help patients in their homes. Briefly, do you want to tell us about the Malaysian Hospice Council, Catherine, and what is this council about?
So we are a council of hospice organization members as well as specialists. And other people who work in palliative care and in community hospice in general. It's an open council, so anyone can join us. Chee Lung, would you like to maybe share a little bit on some of our members?
Yeah, Dr. Lam, I mean, you're the chairman of this hospice council. Is it something new? Has it been around for a long time?
The council was originally founded in 1998. By a handful of organizations who were very interested and very passionate in the development of palliative care nationally. So they united to try to form a national voice representing palliative care. And over the years, it has gradually grown. And now in total, the Malaysian Hospice Council has 25 members. These are organizational members. So they are NGO organizations in the community delivering palliative care. But in addition to that, we felt that it was important that there was better integration and linking between specialists in hospital and organizations as well. And so the Hospice Council started introducing individual membership as well. And so we now have a collection of specialists, doctors, nurses from the Ministry of Health or private practitioners who are also members of the Hospice Council as well. So we're trying to bring everyone together with a united purpose to try to advocate for palliative care, to try to improve standards of palliative care and encourage people to focus on compassionate, competent palliative care delivery.
And how would you describe community-based palliative care? Because many large hospitals have inpatient palliative care services. Then you have places like Hospice Malaysia as well. What is community-based palliative care?
I mean, as the term describes, community-based palliative care is palliative care that is delivered in the community. So it's for people in the community setting. If you're at home and you are in need of palliative care support, so that's palliative care being the approach to care with people with serious illnesses that primarily focuses on symptom relief, the reduction of suffering, and the improvement of quality of life in people. That's what we primarily try to focus on. And if we can add some joy and happiness and moments of brightness to people's lives in the face of what they're having to go through, then I think that's even greater and a bonus if we're able to achieve that.
At the moment, we tend to focus in the period just before death, right? Will community-based palliative care look at advanced illness rather than just focusing on the period just before death, for an example?
Well, there's never actually been any strict rule that palliative care is only focusing on the period before death. In actual fact, the research and what palliative care encourages now is earlier referrals to palliative care services. I think on one hand, there's been some very, there was a landmark paper in 2010 that suggested that palliative care at diagnosis can positively influence the outcomes of illnesses, and people had better quality of life, less depression, and in some instances, improved survival as well because they had less aggressive treatments, and some actually did better. They didn't necessarily have less aggressive treatments, but they had palliative care support through their treatments, and they had better outcomes as well. So there's no strict rule that palliative care is only for the dying. I think that's a major misconception that we want to address, that if you may benefit from it early on, and if you have needs for palliative care, then it's something that we should be trying to look into. The main limitation being the availability of services and the number of people delivering it.
To tack on to what you said about community palliative care, ultimately, the community is where the vast majority of people are. And we want to look at care outside of the hospices as the solution to public health issues. So that's part of the reason why we exist. And looking into teams that go in multidisciplinary teams that utilizes what resources are available, and looking at creative solutions for families. So this minimizes the need for hospital attendances, and it's ultimately cheaper to look after people at home than in a hospital.
So it reduces the overall healthcare cost as well, doesn't it?
Yes. Okay. To the nation and to the family members as well.
How many community hospices do we have across the country?
At the moment, by my last count, there are 30. So most of them are members of the Malaysian Hospice Council. A handful of others have considered joining, and some aren't members.
Okay. And what do you actually do at this community hospice? I mean, I'm trying to imagine this. Okay. So you have a house or whatever, and you know, that is your community hospice. And Catherine, you are part of the Kasih Hospice Foundation. You're the general manager there. How does Kasih Hospice Foundation, for an example, how does it function?
Yes. So our main gist is to provide medical support. Most of this consists of pain and symptom management for our end-of-life care patients. And a big gist of that is, aside from the symptom management, to look into the education of the family members and the primary carers, who usually will need a lot of skill set given to them, and a lot of explanations, and a lot of just getting the family ready for what comes next. So psychosocial support is also offered to families and patients. Medication as and when available. Some hospices will offer respite care. Many hospices offer equipment or will refer equipment necessarily, such as oxygen concentrators, wheelchairs, and other hospital beds, etc. Some hospices offer physical therapists, counselors. We are part of what we consider whole person interdisciplinary care. So we look at what the patient needs first, and then adjust accordingly. And this is something much easier to give in the home context, knowing all the situations at home and the family dynamics, than it would be in the hospital, which is a lot more process-driven.
Okay, but there is that option as well for inpatient palliative services in many large hospitals as well, which is being provided at the moment. What are some of your challenges in running a community hospice?
Well, that would be financial. There's a lack of understanding out there on the true cost of palliative care. It is a specialist field, and therefore it's very expensive. Our SOPs, our compliances are high as well, and medical. There's a lot of sort of confusion that hospices are synonymous with home care or old folks home, you know. So there's some sort of perceptions that we cost as much to run as an old folks home, and this truly is not the case. Kasih runs into about $1.5 million a year, and that sort of finance to raise every year in order to continue providing that sort of service is tough, especially in an economy like this.
Dr. Lam, so do people like yourself who are consultants in palliative medicine, and you, obviously you know, Catherine, in community hospices, you have palliative medicine specialists who work with you as well. Do they charge? How do they charge? Is it a discounted rate or a subsidized rate? Or do most people who, you know, multidisciplinary teams who help you out in running this community-based hospice care outfits, do they work for, you know, almost like for charity, or do they work at a subsidized rate?
I think this varies from hospice to hospice. I mean, personally, I'm a doctor. I'm employed by the University of Malaya, so I work in the government sector. And a lot of the one of the challenges that the hospices face is that the vast majority of the specialists are hospital-based. So they are either working in the Ministry of Health, the Ministry of Education, or they're working in a private hospital. So one of the challenges the hospices face is that how do they get the support and the medical help from the specialists? Most doctors in Malaysia are employed by the Ministry of Health or the private sector. So it's very hard for doctors to leave one sector and to work in another sector. And I think it's one of the areas that really warrants further exploration, whether there can be agreements to enable the specialists to work across sectors to help the hospices do their work as well. So currently, some doctors work on a voluntary basis, so they're not paid at all by the hospices. Some are employed either on a part-time or full-time basis, but they have often left their jobs in the government or the private sector in order to join a hospice.
And how do you, are patients charged? Are families charged for this service, or is it you know, a free service that you provide?
In community NGO hospices, the services are all free. We do not have social enterprises or hybrid models in Malaysia just yet. Perhaps there is a call to look at it at some point in the future. But for now, and because the hospices has in many ways started quite some time ago, slowly and gradually we've grown, it's all been free.
And how do you decide who you're going to help then?
That's really the question for the ages, and it is so dependent on luck to some extent. If you have a state or a champion for that hospice who says, I will start something here, this is what I will provide, this is my capacity, then that hospice can only provide up to that particular capacity. Perlis, for example, has no hospice. So in the MHC, we have hospices in every state except for Perlis, which if you ask me, is a crying shame. It is very piecemeal, and it's really up to who can maintain it and who will take on that burden and that goal to provide this care. Kasey, being based in PJ, we operate 50 kilometers from the center of our office.
Okay, it's a 50 kilometer radius.
Yes,
that you provide. Okay, Dr. Lam.
Yeah, it very much varies between organization to organization, and as Catherine says, it really depends on the manpower. The further you go, the longer it takes, and the fewer people you can see ultimately. I think this is part of trying to integrate palliative care into the health services in Malaysia. So for some states, the government has begun running domiciliary palliative care programs. So we try to work together with them to overlap less as far as possible. But we often get inquiries from public. My relative is in such a state. Where can I get help? And we are trying to link them with organizations or services as best we can. But there's a great need because there are huge swathes of Malaysia which really don't have access to palliative care. And it's something that we want to look to try to address as a body, a palliative care body, together.
We're discussing providing palliative care in the community. On the line with me, Dr. Lam Chee Lung. He's a consultant in palliative medicine and chairman of the Malaysian Hospice Council, and Catherine Ui, vice chairman and of the Malaysian Hospice Council, as well as the general manager of Kasih Hospice Foundation. We're trying to figure out how to get palliative care to the community in a much easier way rather than depending on large hospitals of inpatient palliative services. As you said, it is very much a community-based care that's needed at this stage, when you're at this stage of life. When we come back, I want to find out more about how to improve accessibility for palliative care across the country. What will it take for us to have, many more community-based palliative care centres across the country? That's coming up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. It's our Health and Living segment. We're trying to figure out how to provide palliative care in the community. Dr. Lam Chee Lung, he's a consultant in palliative medicine and chairman of the Malaysian Hospice Council. Together with me, Catherine Uy, the vice chairman of Malaysian Hospice Council and general manager of the Kasih Hospice Foundation. And I think you've both sort of shed more light on what community-based hospice care really is. It's more about providing a community-based hospice care in smaller areas, in a smaller radius, so that more people have access to this care. However, as you said, Dr. Lam, we've only got about 30 community-based hospice care organizations in the whole country, and that is really not enough. Do we know, is there a population ratio for community-based hospice care? I mean, based on models abroad?
So in terms of community services, Australia and New Zealand and Ireland previously projected models of this, and their estimations when they did these studies was somewhere between 2 to 3 palliative care consultants per 100,000 population in the community. So that's actually substantially more than we can provide at the moment, because we don't have that scale. And I think it's also important to bear in mind that those countries have very different health service models. They have very strong primary care networks that augment that the palliative care services augment. It doesn't quite work quite as well in Malaysia. So I would expect the figure nationally would be greater than that as modeled in other countries.
And is there any chance, right? This is just me being the idealist and trying to figure out how to integrate resources and make use of the best of facilities. We are in dire need of community-based mental health care. Is there any way you can integrate both and provide both services in this one area? So, you know, mental health care also is very much community-based. We'll never have enough experts to deal with this, and we need to start training people in the community to help us with this problem. With COVID, we're going to see it's a lurking disease that's just waiting to explode. Catherine, do you even see that as a possibility? Or is it two very different areas which you think should never be mixed up?
Well, we would be very concerned with community mental health from a grief and loss perspective, from a perspective of whether patients have that ability, that resilience to cope, whether they have places they can reach out to in their time of stress and grief, because taking care of a loved one or a family, being a caregiver is an incredibly onerous task. Most of us at some point of time will have this task on our hands. And the earlier we look at end of life issues, ACP, preparing ourselves and our family, the better, of course, and the more we educate ourselves. Most hospices actually have caregiver training resources. Because we just have over the years accumulated a lot of information and a lot of skill sets in our heads, and we can actually share this out with the community. I wish more people knew about this as an option, that hospices, whilst providing specialized medical care, are also a resource to the community. We come from the community. We exist because the community needs us. But we also have this feedback loop that we can offer, and one of the things is support in terms of grief and loss, that's a possibility for development where hospices are concerned, and also to just help and share what works and what doesn't work to family members. Education is a big part of what whole person care is, because when we look at whole person care, we go into the family, we go into their homes, and then we decide, we help the patient decide what is the best care at these circumstances, given what you have in resource-wise in your community, in your home.
And from your experience, Catherine, why do patients and their families, how have they been coping during COVID-19?
It's been really, really tough for end-of-life care patients because they so much of what they need, not just medically, is consists of the reassurance and the education that comes from the medical team. Death is frightening to a lot of people, and it's unfamiliar, and you are wrestling with so many emotions, and it can be very, very overwhelming. Having to rely on a handphone or you know, a sort of a digital device instead of having that real person come in and give you that assurance and check your symptoms, it has been really, really tough. A lot of our patients say it's been a very, very lonely journey. It's been frightening. And as a result, also from a medical perspective, teams become a bit more burnout because you have to find an alternative ways of making your communication rich enough for a very complex topic. There's a lot of insights you might miss by not being in the home, you know, because somebody might say something, but you don't know what the reality is. But you could get it at a glance by going into the house and immediately knowing what kind of family this is, what their values are, how they probably speak to each other. Are they going to do what they say they will do? A lot of this. So the richness of the communication, we struggle to find ways to make up for it. We are, I would say, doing that. But there are issues there. There are lots of issues to overcome because of this.
The pandemic has affected a lot of organizations like yours when it comes to funding. Has that affected Yes. Community-based hospice setup?
Very much so. Funding has become a serious issue of survival for a lot of hospices. We see ourselves as taking huge collateral damage from the pandemic because not only do people we rely on for donations or organizations suddenly say, oh, I don't think we can support you this year, likely not next year as well. And it's just been really, really tough. As I mentioned, palliative care is not a cheap organization to operate. And we have to buy PPEs as well now. We have to look at alternative arrangements, subscribe to digital devices. So all this is ancillary costs we have to tack on, and also project into what sort of how are we going to continue operating in economies like this where funding is not likely going to come in anytime soon or will trickle in.
And how can members of the community support NGO hospices in their area? How many do we have in the Klang Valley?
So in the Klang Valley, we have Kasi Hospice, we have ASPEC, Asunta Palliative, ACC Palliative Care, we have ASIS, which is an organisation linked to Asunta Hospital. There is also Faith, Hope and Love Hospice, Klang Hospice, and there's Hospice Malaysia.
Okay, so still not enough given the population, I'm sure, but what is the level of awareness amongst Malaysians? Do they even know that these community hospices exist?
Unfortunately, a lot of Malaysians, when you do just a off-the-street survey, has this impression that local hospices are government-funded. So this is something we've been trying to fight because then they think we don't need any sort of funding assistance and we have support. And part of this is because in many other countries, government funding or insurance is in line to help alleviate that burden somewhat. But here we provide all our services for free and with very, very little funding.
You know, Dr. Lam, what have you observed about society's perception towards palliative care in general, especially when it's provided within the community? I think for many patients, for many families, just talking about death is a big problem. I can't imagine, you know, opening up a conversation about palliative care, but there's so much. I mean, based on all the shows that we have done, there's so much benefit in palliative care, which people don't realize. But what do you think, if you could correct some of those misconceptions, what would they be, Dr. Lam?
I believe first and foremost, like I said, as mentioned earlier, palliative care is not just about dying. It's really about trying to live. It's trying to enable people to live as best they can, as positively as they can, as richly as they can, for what life that they have. In a way, it's applicable for everyone in that realistically, all of us are dying from the day we are born. But
I would like to say aging.
Sorry?
We're not dying, we're aging, Dr. Lam.
Well, okay, if we're not dying, it's certainly something that is going to happen to us inevitably.
Yes.
We just don't know when. And in a way, it's something that we'd like to encourage people to be aware of, I guess, and to be mindful of. Not to be preoccupied and obsessed by it, but just rather, I think you can live life more fully and wholly if you are, if you smell the roses along the way, that be too occupied by preoccupations about that. I think people can live life more fully if they do that. So I think the first preconception is that it's not just about dying, it's about trying to live. And it's important that people are mindful of that. I don't think, and from a point of view of fear or worry about what a palliative care doctor will say or do, I think generally all of us are very open. We don't want to force people down one path or another. We like to give people choice, and we respect choice and autonomy because in a way, people are self-determining. They know what they want. They know what they hope for. And on one hand, from the medical side, sometimes our expertise is perhaps what is achievable, and we can try and negotiate and come to shared decisions with patients and family members, ideally. Sometimes there are conflicts because sometimes patients and families have different ideas, or sometimes the healthcare staff may have different views as to what is best. But the main thing is, let's get together, let's talk, and let's try and understand each other and listen to one another so that we can do our best to make the best choices to support what you need and what you want to the best of our abilities.
We have a National Palliative Care Policy and Strategic Plan 2019 to 2030. It was launched last year. It's a blueprint to achieve good palliative care nationwide. Does it include community-based hospices?
It does, yeah. It does include it as part of it because one strand of the strategy was focusing on community palliative care development. So a proportion of that deals with the Ministry of Health trying to build up domiciliary palliative care in their own capacity within the clinic, the family medicine clinics in the country. But they are very stretched services as they currently exist. A part of it also is trying to see how we can develop community hospices and NGOs, how they can be strengthened, how standards could be improved, how if I get referred to palliative care in one part of the country, I can expect the same level of services I would expect in another part of the country. So it's trying to make things a little bit more uniform, standardize services, ensure that people run to satisfactory capacity delivering good services to the people in their locality.
And any funding models that you would, that's been spoken about in the strategic plan, or are there funding models from around the world that you could take on and implement here in Malaysia so you're not so dependent on, donations and people giving you money? I've always been against that. I mean, that's never sustainable. You need to have some kind of you need to run it as a business or a social enterprise or something, or it's never going to be worth it, right? You need to pay your people. A lot of this is, there's this perception that if you're a charity or you're a foundation, people work for free. That's not true at all. I mean, people need to be paid. What is a sustainable funding model?
At this point of time, Mira, I don't think any country has found a perfect solution to this. And it's usually a mixture, a combination between the private sector, the public sector, voluntary sector, people working together and linking up to try and find a solution to this problem. So if we think about examples, in Singapore, for example, the government will almost match funding on a one-to-one basis, if I'm not mistaken. So if an NGO raises 1 million ringgit, the government will give them extra 1 million ringgit in order to help fund their services. Singapore's health service also has an insurance-based model, which is tiered, and it's very means-tested. So in a way, if you are able to pay, they would probably ask you to pay. But if you're not able to pay, there are levels of insurance coverage and social support that will enable you to access palliative care there. But realistically, I think palliative care and the models we're looking at is really focused, really has to focus on ways that we can link together and work together, because there are, I think the opportunities are abundant. When we were talking about, when Catherine and I were talking about this before, we were thinking that part of it maybe can be voluntary donations, fundraising, etc. But as you say, it's not sustainable. We need to try to work more closely with the corporate sector and see whether we can get more support from a corporate social responsibility point of view. In addition to that, I was, in my own mind also, I was wondering whether some funding would come from the insurance sector as well. For example, people who have private health insurance will usually spend their money for treatments, but I think it's worthwhile considering perhaps ring-fencing some of that money to enable people to still have care. Because you can pay for all your treatment, you can exhaust all your money, but if you have a small sum, if you have a sum after that to support care, then perhaps that can enable people to have access to palliative care services, which in themselves should not be expensive. The medications we use are not not considerably expensive in comparison to a lot of treatments that people receive in hospitals instead. So I would hope that there are other ways of working. And I think it's important that we try to build models. So there's a model which, there's a proposal on building compassionate communities where people try to look after one another and look out for one another. If there are opportunities where, let's say, someone working in the pharmacy sector with such expertise can spare some time, a little bit of time, half a day a week, a day a week, to try and help a hospice try to handle their medications, it may enable services to run more capably and effectively with that oversight and support from other channels.
Okay. Because we have social security contributions, we have EPF, right? But do you think that the biggest gap is the fact that we don't have a national healthcare financing scheme?
In part, yeah, that certainly would go away. But I think health economics is a huge challenge, because there's never really enough money to fund everything, and we have to prioritize what are the really important things, what we can afford, what would be of value and provide life, but good life as well. That's what healthcare should be about.
Ultimately, this is an issue of public health, so it really depends how much our society prioritizes it, how much our government prioritizes it, and want to say that this is a conversation we all of us must have, and all of us must see what can be done. I think we miss out on, to some extent, funding, better funding, better support from, say, corporate sector CSR, because we are somewhat seen as this not so popular kind of thing to have CSR or go into. So if there were public policies that says we will prioritize or you get special dispensation if you support palliative care with your CSR policies, then we'll likely see hospices better supported in the country, and especially in remote areas. So it's a lot of it is for the government to set, but in the absence of that, then the community really has to look at creative solutions, and I believe creative solutions, creative technologies abound out there. There's plenty we can use. We just need that interest and that sort of recognition that of the value of palliative care, of the fact that it's for everyone. It is everybody's right, according to the WHO, and to make that conversation necessary, to make it a priority.
So how do we get in touch with you if you want to either donate or maybe start a community-based hospice care centre? Do they contact you?
We have the Malaysian Hospice Council website that you can get in touch with us there and give us an email. You can also just reach out to the hospices around you. There's one in every state except for Perlis. There actually is a lot of hospices out there, and they all need your help. So whatsoever means you've you feel available, I'm sure they will welcome starting a conversation with you.
Dr. Lam, would you have a message for us?
I would pretty much say, yeah, as I would echo what Catherine says, really, that there are hospices out there. I mean, there are several hospices in Penang, in Kelantan, in Sabah, in Sarawak. Try to reach out to them. They all need help, and they can all help as well, I would hope. If there are any champions who want to start new palliative care services, get in touch with us. Perhaps we can start thinking and looking at how we can work with you to introduce a new service, a new model of working. We need to try new things because I think there's a lot of room for innovation and creativity as well to try to tackle the problems that are faced nationally.
Thank you both very much for sharing your thoughts with me. That was Dr. Lam Chee Lung, a consultant in palliative medicine and chairman of the Malaysian Hospice Council, and Catherine Ooi, the vice chairman of Malaysian Hospice Council and general manager of Kasih Hospice Foundation, speaking to us about community-based hospices on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.